Hello, Steve. Hello, Jill. It's time to game classy.
I have been told a recording is in progress.
It is. It is, sir. It is. It's also a winter wonderland out by my house today. I don't know how it is by you.
It's a winter wonderland. It's awful.
It's terrible. Like snow after Christmas is just. I wish snow would get the memo that we don't want it here.
Yes.
But then again, I have to deal with all these people who are like it's so hard for me because I hate snow and I hate this weather, but I also hate people who are like, oh, I'm so glad it waited so long to snow. And it's like, no, that's global warming. We're all going to die of a holiday. Like I get your fun little quip you made on Facebook there, buddy, but it's actually a symptom of a much larger problem.
Hey, don't worry. There's the G5 whatever disagreed thing where everyone was like, yeah, we're gonna do a thing, and then at the end they were like, yeah, we're actually not gonna do a thing. So don't worry, everyone's on it.
You know what would reduce the carbon? What would reduce our carbon immensely? Eating all of the rich people.
Yeah. I mean, you're right.
If we ate all the billionaires, that would significantly reduce our carbon and the carbon footprint of humanity.
It's true.
I don't know if that's actually.
It wouldn't necessarily be from the steaks they eat either.
No, my thing is, I don't know if that's actually true, but I think it would make a big difference.
Did you watch any New Year's thing?
No. I went to bed at 10.
Very good.
Yes, I don't.
Wisdom.
I am 40. I'm 40 years old. I do not need to be staying up till midnight on New Year's for no reason whatsoever.
I heard Miley Cyrus's titties popped out.
Yes, but you didn't see anything.
I see.
I saw the video on the internets.
I see.
Well, not that I was that excited to see. It's like I've seen Miley Cyrus topless. I've seen plenty of people topless. I don't need to, like, it's not something where I'm like, quick to the internets.
Oh, sure. I mean, you can literally just, I mean, let's just say, like, you know, Google, you could Google that information simple, you know, obviously. Mm-hmm. But my thing is more the spectacle of the situation.
Yeah. It's the internets. And it's like, we live in an age where it's like, why is this even like news? It's like, aren't all the people whose like monocles fall out when they see a topless woman and go, oh my stars, aren't they all dead at this point?
No, and that's why it's funny that it happened.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
Yeah. It turns out that all the top the monocle people aren't dead, and that in fact is what makes it funny when someone has a wardrobe malfunction. The people who are there to go, oh, I've been so offended by the boobening of this young woman.
Of society.
The boobening of society.
Now, let's be fair. If it was someone hanging dong out on stage, I'd be like, wait a second, I got to see this. Because it's more of a rarity in our day and age. Not that I'm excited to see it. Well, I mean, I am a little. Because it's something that's so unique in our society that I'd be like, ooh, a dong?
Yeah, I mean, I'm excited to see it.
Well, it also depends on who and what the situation is. You know, I always say it, like, it's like, humanity has like this weird compulsion to see other humans naked. And that's like something that we never have come to grapple with. As a society, any society, like
we live in a society.
But what I'm saying is that there is not, you could name any person on the planet and like, well, let's say like any semi-famous person on the planet, like even like a, like a, like a C-level politician that you maybe could have heard of, and you could have said, like, you go to anybody in the United States who may have heard of this person, said, you want to see this person naked? They'll probably be like, yeah, I want to see that. Like, I am slightly curious about seeing this person naked. And it doesn't have to be, it could be anybody. It could be a very unattractive person, but still you'd say, like, yeah, I want to see what this guy looks like naked, you know? Exactly. So, I mean, it could get a little wonky. I mean, like, you know, you'd say, like, someone like Ross Perot, right? Like, it's like, I don't necessarily, I'm not going to be titillated by Ross Perot naked, but you know what? I want to know what he looks like naked.
Yeah, like, you want to see that.
Yeah, I think it takes a lot of wind out of the sails of people when you know what they look like naked. They are less important in that aspect.
Yeah, I think you're right. It makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, Trump would not have as much power over his constituency if everybody got to see him naked. And it's not because, like, you know, he's fat or he has a tiny penis. I mean, he might not have a tiny penis, but we can kind of assume he has a tiny penis.
By all accounts, he has a tiny penis.
Yes. But
I'm not saying that's true, obviously, because, you know, that could be obviously our highly successful and highly popular podcast can't possibly risk being sued. But so we would not want to slander the illustrious Mr. Trump. So, you know, we're not going to say definitively that his wiener is a wee one, but all signs point to very small.
Very small, yes. But I mean, if his supporters saw him naked, they'd probably just be like, oh, he is but human. And that's it. Like, he no longer has his control and power over people because they have seen him naked. And it's not because he's vulnerable. It's not because of anything. I think there's just something psychologically inside of us that just goes, oh, okay, yeah, he's human. And then that's it. He no longer has any control or power.
Okay.
Yes. So that's why I think everyone should have to, at birth, not at birth, everybody when they turn 18 should have a, well, let's not say 18, let's say 30, because when you're 30, that's when your body starts to go. You have a full length body picture of yourself naked, uploaded to the internet, and everybody has access to everybody naked. And that's it at the age of 30. So we no longer have to, like, get excited about, like, Miley Cyrus having a nipple slip.
But that's the thing. Yeah. The thing is, here's a counterpoint to that. The people get most excited about seeing naked in general, I would say, would be people like said Cyrus. And if that's the case, you know, we're most excited to see, you know, just saying, not saying me, but we're just going to say most excited to see someone like that, someone like that nude. Correct.
Yeah. So, well, I mean, that just has to do with the fact that you can't see them naked, which is weird for Miley Cyrus because you can see her naked all over the place, but you can't.
Yeah, see most celebrities. You can.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just that you can see it. So it's like, you know, all of that mystique is gone. It's the fact that you can't see someone naked that makes that creates a mystique in the whole thing surrounding them. That whole shenanigans.
The real question then becomes: where are my Alfred Molina nudes?
Hello, Peter. Have you seen it yet? Peter. That movie's amazing.
I have not seen it.
You know, and that's the thing.
Hello, Peter.
And I was talking. I texted you about this. Is the fact that to have Alfred Molina and Willem Dafoe share the screen together as Dr. Octopus and Green Goblin, it's so amazing. It's just like, this is everything that I've ever wanted. And it goes to show you, like, you have two good actors, like real actors playing these parts, and you let them chew the scenery. It's awesome. It's just amazing. I'm just mad that they didn't let Sam Raimi direct Spider-Man and they have him directing, you know, Doctor Strange. They should have had Sam Raimi finish up his Spider-Man. Like, if he was able to do that movie, it would have been a perfect end cap to Spider-Man. But whatever, it was a fine movie.
Yeah, for me, my thing is, I think it's always been one of the problems with the Marvel movies in general, and this is a weird thing, like, maybe you have some insight, but, like, the Marvel, and maybe just comic book movies, but like there is a, I would say, almost compulsive obsession with introducing and killing the villain in the Marvel movie.
Yeah, but
like, because I mean, think about that. Like, think of how many more. Think of what you know. Obviously, it took this big. I know there's like a big like multi-dimensional like plot dealy for this movie, but like it took that to just get Alfred Molina, you know, back as Doc Ock, and like everyone's you know everyone knows he's fucking great.
Mm-hmm. Well, I can answer that slightly in that. Movies operate on a different logic level than comic books, because comic books, you have to produce 12 different books every year for an extended period of time. And in the case of Spider-Man, it's over the course of 50 years at this point, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's a fuck ton of comics, not to mention the fact that it's, you have Spider-Man, the Amazing Spider-Man, Peter Parker, it's Peter Parker, the Amazing Spider-Man. And then it's like your friendly neighborhood Spider-Man and, you know, all of these other Spider-Man books on top of Spider-Man 2099.
Right.
You have to keep these villains going, because if they don't keep going, you have to create new villains. And if you have to create new villains, 12 new villains a year for 50 years, you're going to start, the well is going to get really dry really soon. In movies, you don't have to do that, because in movies, the most amount of movies like a series has is like how many Bond movies are there? There's like 22 Bond movies, right?
There's a lot of fucking Bond movies, man.
Yeah. And Blofeld's like the villain in, I don't know, three or four of them. And he's the only reoccurring villain they have. So even still, like the maximum amount is like 2 years worth of villains you have to create. So in the case of like Spider-Man is, you get three movies and then you reboot, you're done. So you don't have to worry about killing off your villains, because you have a big well to draw from, because you have multiple years of Spider-Man, and then you reboot it and you can have those same villains again. So it doesn't matter if you kill them, but it's also, but it also goes to the fact that a lot of these screenwriters are not comic book fans, so they don't understand the medium. And part of the medium for comic books is that the hero doesn't kill the villains. It was actually, that was added into comic books as a convenient way to not kill the villains, so that you could reuse them over and over again.
Right. That's where I was going. Cause like, I mean, obviously I understand the logistics of like killing off your villain for a movie. My flabbergastion. My flabbergastion.
I like that word.
Yeah, thank you. I just came up with it now. I think it's pretty good, actually. So my flabbergastion occurred because the movies obviously are based on comics. So like, it was a surprise to me that they did that in the first place.
Yeah, it's like, as I say,
that's my surprise. It's like, is it that started, like, they wouldn't have just done it as like, oh, we're making a comic movie. Comic book characters don't kill their villains. So, you know, we'll just end this movie and the villain will be captured, as is the way in comics. And I mean, I think the first obvious, like, biggest one, and you know immediately where I'm going, Batman.
Oh, yeah.
Well,
but that's the thing, is so in the movies, they do have a little bit of that, because a lot of that goes back to Hays Code and the comics code back when that was going through in the 1948, something like that, I don't remember. But you have these codes that prevent the hero from killing the villain. So that's what we expect as an audience. The hero will not kill the villain. Of course not. Of course the hero won't kill the villain.
The hero has some sort of code preventing him from killing the villain. Perhaps it could be some sort of Hays code.
Well, that's the movie one. It's the comics code authority would be the one that it's like, what? Wait, so Batman and Robin aren't gay? No, we can't have them being gay.
There's a whole lot of questions that come up with that one.
So what happens is we as an audience are like, oh, Batman's gonna kill the Joker. But every fucking movie with comic books, and this is where it gets annoying to me as a person who really loves movies and really loves comic books, loves comic book movies, is that remember how last cast I was talking about how every sequel goes to Europe?
Yes.
If a villain dies in a superhero movie, they have to die by getting hoisted by their own petard. Like, it has to happen that way. Every movie. It's like, Green Goblin gets killed by his own glider. Dr. Octopus gets drowned by his machine. Trying to think of another one off the top of my head. Red Skull gets killed by the Tesseract. The hero never kills the villain. The villain always ends up killing themselves, which is fine, except for the fact that it happens in every fucking movie. So you're just like, goddamn.
Right. Well, the villain who's using the hero's power, who's using a variant of the hero's power, kills themselves.
Yeah. And not to mention the fact that the on the flip side of that very argument, though, is you have Man of Steel, the horrible Superman movie, where Superman does kill the villain. You're like, oh, I don't like that at all. But mainly because they did that with the one hero that really shouldn't kill the villain. Like Superman, if we had an hour and a half to talk about Superman on this podcast, I will tell you immense feelings I have about Superman. But yeah. Superman does not, it would not kill.
I think Superman's sweet. However, I will say this in this particular instance, I was kind of like surprised, and maybe it's my own faulty memory, but you know, perhaps you can give me a correction if I'm wrong here. But didn't Christopher Reeve Superman kill Zod?
Mm-mm.
No. Hasn't Superman killed Zod? I could have sworn that Superman as a character has killed Zod as a character before, prior to this film. Maybe I'm wrong.
Maybe in the comic books.
I could be entirely wrong, but I seem to remember someone like pointing out like this is exactly how Superman killed Zod in blank. Like it was supposedly a straight from like a story moment. Like this is exactly how and why, because that was the whole point. Like I mean, the whole point of that arc was like, you know, the like, can you force the one dude who can never kill to kill? That was obviously the rub of that one. And that's an interesting question. I mean, I don't want to say problem. I think the gripe with that is that's a situation that maybe would have been a more like poignant opener character study kind of thing.
Superman doesn't actually kill Zod. I mean, it's hard so it's been a long time since I saw Superman 2, but Superman 2, Superman does not snap Zod's neck, right?
Okay.
Superman, you know, he gets him depowered. And then throws him into a canyon, I think it is, or something like that, or I can't remember what it is.
Okay, so he presumably kills
him. Yeah, but he doesn't like kill him. Like he doesn't snap his neck.
Yeah. Okay.
Anyway, you know, but yes,
that's a weird one because like I mean, like that's a situation a situation where I'm just like, I mean, I'm pretty sure Superman would do that. Like if you put Superman in like the no win situation, either innocent life or kill a villain, I think.
Oh, yes, Superman I think Superman would make that pragmatic decision.
Yeah,
and it's actually I think Superman would make that decision because of his upbringing as like a farm boy, right? Mm-hmm. You know, on the farm. You know, he's taught that you have to kill your livestock, right? You have to, right. I don't want to say humans are livestock, but that killing is a necessary part of the life cycle, right? Like you have a fox getting into the hen house, you have to set out a fox trap. You can't, you know, just let the fox get the hens.
Right. The fox will kill all your chickens if you don't stop the fox.
Killing is a necessary part, but it's part of that whole, like, you only do it if you have to do it kind of thing. Right.
Right.
So that's what makes it interesting. And then like they always talk about how in modern Superman, I don't know why we're getting on this because I have other stuff I want to talk about. Right. This actually is interesting because I have been thinking about this quite a bit, is that in modern Superman, you know, more modern, I should say, like from the 2000s, we started like they really focused on Superman as the immigrant. Right. Because the Superman story is he's an immigrant from Krypton. He came to Earth. He came to the United States. He was raised, you know, technically as an illegal alien. It's an interesting story, and it really is prescient in this day and time. However, I think a better concept for Superman has always been, it's like you were raised in a place that is actually very bigoted, is actually kind of like the people who live there are awful to people that are different, right?
Yes.
And that he's raised by two incredibly loving parents. Like, and that's the cool thing, is that you don't have that a lot in comics. It's like, you know, there's always some issue with the, you know, the people's parents, you know, like Peter Parker's parents died, so he's raised by his aunt. Batman's parents are killed, blah, blah, blah. But Superman's parents were both alive. They raised him correctly. Right. And they taught him like all of
they did the whole thing where they're like, these are values. Yeah. And these are like, don't be a dickhead.
Exactly. Like, don't be a dick. Don't like, and like true, like American values. And that's what Superman uses in making and informing his decisions. And that's something that I think is lost in this day and age. Like, Superman doesn't have to have these moral quandaries and like these the crises of faith, because he was raised in a very loving, pragmatic household, right?
Where it's the Star Trek Discovery argument. Like, we're like Star Trek, like the argument about Star Trek Discovery, that I don't know if you're following any Star Trek stuff right now, but like the big argument, or not argument, but like the thing that's been pointed out about Discovery a lot, is that like Discovery is really bleak.
Yes, it like, is.
It is a Star Trek show. Like, so like people are like, so like there's like, it seems like a lot of people seem to have come around or like Discovery as a show, but like Star Trek, like people who are into like Star Trek are like, yeah, Discovery's kind of bad, because Discovery is bleak. Like, there's tons of betrayals, there's like, you know, it seems like there's no hope, and it's just like, Star Trek is not, that's generally not where you want to be thematically with Star Trek, not at least with your like main series. Like, your main series is supposed to be about, you know, the best that humanity has to offer. Like, that's the whole point of Star Trek. It's supposed to be about how much better we are and how much we've advanced because of the hardships that we went through. That's the whole point. It's like, it seems like they're showing like you are showing content that would have been like written as ancient history in the Star Trek world, because it's like we've gotten past like,
oh, this. Yeah. They like the Captain Picard looking at humanity nowadays would just be like, it's a bunch of fucking savages.
Yeah, I mean that's what they said. That's like when they went to the almost eerily prescient Q trials in the like quasi post apocalyptic universe. It's like, man, that's getting close. Yeah. We're getting close here.
We're getting close. Well, I mean, I always laugh at Bones in 1984, where he's like, you know, treating cancer with radiation, why don't you just cut her skull open and use trepidation, you know?
Yes, exactly.
It's like that. But the with Star Trek, it's the same thing. It's Star Trek is, what do we do when we get into this situation? Well, we fall back on the ideals of the Federation, right? You know, it's like, what does the Federation tell us to do in these situations? And, you know, 9 times out of 10, following the Federation is not necessarily going to result in, well, not 9 times out of 10, but the rules of the Federation might not necessarily answer all of our questions, but it's a good guiding source. Like,
yes,
like what, like with always a Measure of a Man, you know, Picard argued that Data was a sentient being based on the principles of the Federation.
Yes.
Like, and he just argued it from that. And the other guy did too. The other guy said, no, he's not a sentient being as, you know, defined by the Federation. Oh, and you know what?
They had Madoc.
Yeah, whatever his name was. But they had a conversation on it. I mean, it was a heated conversation. We were invested because we all think that Data is a sentient being because it's Brent Spiner put up in makeup. However, if it was like a Chuck E. Cheese robot that just acted more like a human being, we might feel a little differently about it. But because it's that play on that, is why we feel the way we do when we watch it. And that's how it creates a guiding principle, which is why, you know, after watching Star Trek The Next Generation as a child, I was like, you know what? I think a lot of, and I don't think that we should ever treat a human being as not a human being. You know, it's one of those things where it's like, I'm more informed by Star Trek than I was by the Catholic Church. anyway, let's I want to talk about some gaming stuff.
We call it the pop culture moment.
Yes. of Spider-Man Far From Home, which I very much say go see, especially if you've watched Tobey Maguire's Spider-Man. It is so much worth it. And the Andrew Garfield ones. I mean, those movies are terrible, but it does go to show you in this movie, if Andrew Garfield was given a good Spider-Man script, he would be adorable. It's just that he had a bad Spider-Man script. So
I have to say like one note, even the worst comic book movies, I don't think I've, I mean, I'm not going to say ever, but I can't recall any time where I've been like, the casting was just the worst part of this character. Usually just like the casting's fine. Like, you know, for example, the Fantastic Four movie is a piece of shit, but like that, like the casting
was great. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like some terrible movie. But well,
okay. That guy could have been fine. Doom was written badly. Like Doom didn't have his Latvian accent. Like that was just a poor like, I'm sure that guy delivered the performance that they wanted. He just wasn't Doom. Like was just.
Well, I always blame everything on Avi Arad. So.
Yeah, that's fine. And that's the thing too. Like Doom would have been best cat. Like if Fantastic Four were made as a current Marvel film, I think they would. Maybe even like do some hype for Doom where like they don't reveal who it is and they're just like they only show Doom with the mask on
and then he takes it off and it's the Rock.
No, it's obviously Chris Evans. Chris Pratt.
Okay, no
yeah, even better than Chris Evans, it's Chris Pratt. It's like, but he's Star-Lord.
he's Star-Lord. You know, I always I know everybody wants Mads Mikkelsen for Doom, which I agree, but Mads Mikkelsen's too old at this point, so we have to kind of get past that a little bit. Mads Mikkelsen is like 50 years old.
Doom is David Prowse.
What's that?
So you could always David Prowse it. No. Or you just have someone be Doom and Mads Mikkelsen is the voice.
Yes, but he'd have to take off the mask to show the scarred face or something.
Yeah, but he's horribly destroyed. So you could literally just do it like Vader, where you just take the fucking mask off and then there's Mads Mikkelsen.
Yeah, I mean, it all comes down to, can you let a really good actor chew the scenery back to Spider-Man? You know, it's like you have Willem Dafoe and why can't I think Doc Ock's name now?
Alfred Molina.
Yeah, Alfred Molina. You have them, two of them, these two wonderful actors chewing scenery. Like, you can't have Mads Mikkelsen, like, you can't David Prowse that. Mads Mikkelsen has to be in that suit because part of the movement and the body language is about that chewing the scenery. If someone else is doing that to his language, it's not going to work as well. So
I could see that.
Yeah. Anywho, so let's talk about Lego video games. I have spent this entire break.
Games?
Yeah, Lego video games. You know, the Lego,
like,
Star
like
Wars.
Lego Lord of the Rings and stuff?
Yeah. Nice. I wanted to talk about Lego Hobbit. Have you ever played Lego the Hobbit?
I have not played Lego the Hobbit. I played Lego Lord of the Rings, and I loved Lego Lord of the Rings. I thought Lego Lord of the Rings was fantastic.
Lego Lord of the Rings, the biggest problem with Lego Lord of the Rings was the jumping mechanism and the water in that game were fucking terrible. Jumping was the worst. Like, if you had to jump from a platform to a platform in Lord of the Rings, Lego Lord of the Rings.
Oh, yeah, it's hard.
It was fucking unbearable.
You really needed those infinite lives.
Yeah. And not to mention the fact that if you slightly touched water, you would explode in that game. And it was just like, you know, I don't remember that ever happening in the movies. Like, most of these guys could wade, you know, waist deep in water and be fine.
Yeah, I mean, I believe there's even a specific scene where Samwise hits the water pretty hard.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and so that did bother me. But Lego the Hobbit, I want to tell you, this is probably the best Lego game I've ever played. I got it for $5 during the Steam sale. I was playing it over my Christmas break. And I was like, oh man, this game is pretty awesome. Like, the levels are fun. The mechanics all really flow really nice. The open world environment is really cool. They give you a Lego horse to ride around in, so you could ride around. You don't have too many characters to collect. There's enough. There's a lot of side quests and stuff like that. But Steve, playing the game, make it to Desolation of Smog, right?
Right.
They think they trap Smog. Smog's like, you think you can hold me? And he breaks free of the gold and he flies out the front of Erebor. And Bilbo goes, what have we done? Right. And that's when the game ends. They never added Battle of Five Armies in the fucking game.
Wow. No way.
Yes. Absolutely. So you're like, I'm so mad because it's such a fantastic game. And I had to look it up. I looked it up and they said, like, yeah, we were going to make a DLC for it, but we didn't.
Wow.
I was so mad.
Wow.
Especially because it really got me in the mood for Hobbit again, for watching The Hobbit and doing all this Hobbit stuff.
Right. Because,
you know, I really loved playing the game. I actually sat down and watched An Unexpected Journey just because I was playing the game, and I got so mad that they didn't have five armies in there, even though Five Armies wasn't the best movie, but it would have made an excellent Lego game because it was essentially a video game.
It would have been a fantastic Lego game. I would be so bold as to say it would be a fantastic Lego game.
Yeah,
because like lots of people running around and lots of fighting, that would be perfect for Lego.
Exactly, that's what I'm saying. And then you're like, God damn it. God damn it. But I do. I would say that, like, it is the pinnacle of the Lego style series of video games. I know that they keep doing them. They've done some DC ones, and they did a Jurassic World one recently. But it's just kind of like, man, they really nailed it with that Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit.
Man, yeah, that sounds good. You know what? I don't want to play it. I did want to play it, and then I was thinking, I was like, man, maybe I do want to play it. And then I literally, I literally was like, oh, wait, no, you just said that they don't have an ending, so I'm not going to play it. Yes. that would irk me.
I mean, like, yeah. But when you think about it, the ending of Battle of Five Armies would literally just be running around Dale for fucking the entire game. It's literally like one space. Like, you have multiple things that are going on. You're fighting around Dale. You're going, you would start off by you shooting down Smaug, of course. Right. And then, of course, it would have the first battle, which would be the humans versus the humans and the dwarves and elves.
Mm.
All of them fighting. And then, of course, it would lead up to the goblin invasion. And then you'd have this one scene where the big rock worms would come out, and you're like, oh, fuck, rock worms. Because that was weird in the movie. I don't know why they had rock worms in the movie, but
it was cool.
Was it cool? I don't know if that was necessarily cool.
I mean, they were pretty cool. I mean, giant worms are cool, man. Giant worms are cool. I don't know. They're cool. I wasn't blown away by the fact. I wasn't like, oh my god, they were fucking giant worms. I mean, they weren't the Shai-Hulud.
Well, what is
the Shai-Hulud?
Yes, but that was me watching it. I was like, what did we need the giant worms? Was this necessary?
necessary. No, is it necessary that I drink my own urine? No, but it's sterile and I like the taste.
You know, you've brought that up in the last three podcasts we've done.
You know, it is very prescient. It is just always at the forefront of my mind. If someone says necessary, that's all I can think about. I don't know why. I haven't even seen that movie that up, and it just been burned into my brain.
Yeah, I was, the funny thing was in looking at and watching The Hobbit and playing The Hobbit video game, I was like, oh man, I wish I had some Hobbit models. So when I went on the old internets and looked them up, and I was like, I am no way paying any of this money for any of this nonsense garbage.
Oh yeah, the prices are ridiculous.
They're actually, from what I was looking at, they aren't as bad as they were, I don't know, like 10 years ago when we were last.
Absolutely. The relaunch 100% did matter.
Yeah, it looks like they would, like, in looking at it, it looks like they really did not lower the prices, but it, like, they I guess
stabilized, they
readjusted.
Because I don't know, like, my thing would be stabilized, because like something that was like a $150 gouging figure is no longer that expensive. Now, this does not apply to metal. This applies to things that were like Radagast and his rabbit sleigh is only a resin model. It's only ever been a resin model. but out of print, that thing was worth, you know, a shit ton. I think you can get it again now, but like, so that was one of the figures that was going for like double MSRP or like triple MSRP. And then they finally got some more out. So like that stupid price went down. I don't think it did anything for the medals. Like, I think like
the
Kimmel riders are still worth a fortune.
Well, I mean, like I pulled up the front page of the Middle Earth minis and the Rohan Royal Knights, three of them, it's $50 for three, right? But if I recall correctly, they were like, I want to say the Royal Knights were in a blister, but you did get two figures. You got foot and mounted. No, you didn't, because the foot were in a three pack. The mounted figure was like a $12 blister. So that was like 36 for three. It was either 12 or like a 15. It was between 36 and 45 bucks. So, you know, 20 years later on, you know, the relaunch in the new one where they're $50. Okay, take it for inflation, whatever. I don't really remember that much, but it could be. I mean, most
of that sounds reasonable.
It does. Like the Balrog is 60. It's plastic now, but I would probably pay a little bit more to not have to put up with the awfulness of the metal Balrog.
Yeah, like that kit was rough.
Yeah.
Great looking kit, but man, it did not want to go together.
But the thing is, I'm not paying $50 for a plastic fellowship from the box set, the relaunched box set of the original, the Mines Memorial one. Mm-hmm. It's they want $50 for that fellowship and they're not good sculpts. That's the problem.
Yeah, that's kind of bad. The Mines Memorial sculpts were fine for what they were. I mean, they were fine sculpt. That has the backpack full of sausages, Sam, which is pretty good. But I mean, those
sausages. Yeah. Just small town Sam.
Frying up his leg and ham. He's got a backpack full of sausages. Yeah, like he's fine, but I mean to date those models, we were working at workshop when those models came.
Yeah, well, exactly, that's what I'm saying. These models are 20 years old at this point. They've made back their initial investment on those models.
That's kind of not acceptable in terms of what you're going to buy now. You know, just. No. We can all expect more, like, and that, so yeah, I think that's fair. I would not pay $50 for those.
But the one, okay, so what I did want to buy though was because I can get the majority of Lord of the Rings models. There are companies that produce 3D printed files for them. So and they're pretty damn close to what Games Workshop puts out, right?
Yeah, I've seen some really nice 3D printed Middle Earth stuff.
Yeah, there's one company called The Print Goes Ever On, which I absolutely adore. They are not movie accurate, but they're just movie accurate enough that and stylized enough and they're bigger too. You could shrink them down to like the 25 millimeter or whatever, but they're probably at 28, 32s, but they're gorgeous looking. I absolutely adore them. But the one set that I really kind of did want was I was looking for the when all of the dwarves from The Hobbit are suited up in the armor as they charge out.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
yeah, they look dope.
Bum, 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 bum. You know,
I'm pretty sure that's an available kit from Workshop,
it
actually.
It is an available kit. And I looked it up and they want $130 for the set.
That's pricey.
Exactly. I was like, no.
How many dwarves are in Thorin's company?
There's 13 dwarves.
Okay, so they literally want $10 a dwarf.
Well, there's 14 in the set though, because you get Bilbo.
Oh, so you get a free Bilbo. You get $10 a dwarf plus free Bilbo.
Plus the free Bilbo. They are in resin though, which
of course.
Yeah, which you're at that point. You're like, ugh.
See, this is where I think GW could really capitalize on the 3D printing thing, dude. They could sell you those. Would you buy them? Like, would you buy them for, I don't know, let's say, would you buy a limited print thing of them for $60?
The files?
Like, would you pay $60 for them?
$60 for the files. Let's see.
I'm just going with half their, I'm just going with half their asking okay. price.
So if it was, yeah, I probably would end up doing it maybe for, I have 60 is a lot. 40, probably 40 would be a little bit more within my price range.
Okay. 60. Well, you would know it was, you would also know what was more like of a reasonable, like yeah. what would be a competitive price for a 3D printed
yeah. console. So I think for the 60 would be good if they threw in something like, let's say, I don't know, like the Gates of Erebor, like you could print that as well. I probably wouldn't okay. print it, but at least if they included it, it would feel like it was a little bit of a deal, like a little bit of yeah, terrain okay. for me to print off as well with it. Maybe a little base plate or scenery, something like that. I the figures themselves, I think what would be good is if they were digitally sculpted and you could print them out yourself. So right. like, for example, the who's the big fat dwarf? Bomber, right?
Bomber mm-hmm.
on the set has like this flail, and the flail is easily going to break 100%. And they're all resin models, so every one of their weapons tips and everything else is going to break off at some point. My right, feeling okay. is that, and I was having a conversation with Dwayne about this as well, is that, you know, if you have a 3D printed figure, you haven't printed it, you haven't painted it yet, if it breaks, just print another one. You know, it's not, it costs pennies to print.
Right.
So like, why bother sitting there and trying to glue that back on
when you could
just reprint it? Or like, if there's an issue in the print, like let's say there was like a slippage and you're like, oh, this doesn't look great. There's like this weird line right here. Guess what? Just reprint it. It's fine. No, it's, you know, you could do that. Because if you, like, let's say I bought this Champions of Erebor from Games Workshop, there's the 14 models. I guarantee you one or two of them is going to come out like shit, right?
Or have a break.
Yeah, well, I'm going to open it up and it's going to be like a big miscast or a bubble or something like that.
Yeah,
so then I have to contact Games Workshop and say, hey, look at this. This was a problem. I have to wait for them to send me another one.
You guys sculpted this wrong.
Or not that, but I mean, it would be like, you casted this wrong.
Yes, yes, you casted this wrong. It looks bad. Actually, it was yeah. my bubble.
I'm very surprised Games Workshop, well, I mean, the fact that they don't resculpt a lot of this Lord of the Rings stuff in 3D is mind-boggling to me, because this was all done for casting. And casting is such a pain in the ass in comparison to 3D printing, because I've done both. And I can tell you, casting is far, far harder and worse than 3D printing.
Yeah, I'd imagine it would be, because like there's a lot more that can go wrong when you're having to fiddle with a cast.
Oh, absolutely. And 3D printing, it's like...
Maybe there's an equal amount of things that can go wrong. It's just the ease that things can go wrong when pouring in a cast is really easy.
No, because with 3D printing, it's like you have file... upload and you know, put file in a slicer, upload sliced file onto a thumb drive, put it in my 3D printer, 3D print comes out, right? Maybe it might fail from one or two things going wrong. There's a couple, but there's only like two or three possibilities, and if you account for them, it generally won't happen, right? With casting, it's like, okay, so first of all, we have to make the cast. You know, in 3D printing, you just digitally sculpt. It might take a couple hours to digitally sculpt it or whatever, or you could just get the file. But for a cast, it's like, okay, so I'm going to cast. I'm looking at my workbench right now. I'm going to cast the Space Marine, right? So I take my Space Marine in the pose.
Space Marine.
Yeah. I have to create a two-part cast. So what does that mean? I have to take clay, and I have to put the clay inside of like a little square and roll it out super flat and make it kind of even. Then I have to press in the Space Marine, and then I have to sculpt around the Space Marine to make sure that the groove is right there and that there's no space around the body and make sure it's not too bubbly and there's not too many issues with that. It's like a real precision thing right there. Okay. So then I have to build the box around him. Usually I'll do that out of Legos, because Legos make the best type of really tight feel on there. Then I have to mix the silicone, right? Well,
yes.
Even before that, I have to spray it down with mold release, mix my
silicone. Yes, your silicone will come out.
Yeah. So then I have to mix my silicone to the proper amount, pour my silicone in, and then I have to get my air compressor out along with my pressure pot and put it in there so that all of the air, so there's no bubbles in my mix. All right. That's just the first half of that. So then after that's done and cured after like 30 minutes, I pull it out, take the Legos apart. I have to get all of the clay out and then make sure that that mold works, because if it doesn't, I have to start the process all over again. Put the figure back into the rubberized mold, put more mold release on there. pour the silicone in again, put the Legos back on, pour the silicone back and put it back in there. Hopefully at that point, it's okay that now I have a two-part mold release. Now that's not even, I'm halfway done at this point, because now that I have the two parts of the mold release, it's fine. I have to put those back together, create another box for that, because
my eyes have glazed over. I'm dead.
And then I have to, you know, I have to get my two-part resin to pour in there. And then I have to put it back in the compressor again and wait for all of the air to come out there. And then once that's done, I have to pray that everything worked out and there's no major issues. Otherwise, I have to start all over again. And it's a pain in the ass.
Is outrageous.
You know, and I've had people I've talked about how I do casting, and I have people who've asked, like, can you cast this? I'm like, yeah, I can cast it, but it's not worth it to do for one bit, right? Mm-hmm. It's a fuck ton of money and a fuck ton of work for one bit. Like, you have to want like hundreds of this in order for it to work out.
Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah.
You
basically need to really have the concept of, like, essentially you're going to be mass producing whatever you're going to put in the effort to make the mold for, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, that's the key thing. So, like, with 3D printing, it doesn't make any sense to do that.
Right. Like, that makes sense. So, like, with casting, like, I mean, it's probably not the best example, but like a shoulder pad is like the worst idea in the world, but like an army's worth of shoulder pads is like, yes.
So one of the things that people are doing right now with 3D printing, and you'd probably appreciate this, is you know those the scanners that they use to make scans of your teeth for creating stuff? So people who are working in the dentistry field who are also Games Workshop enthusiasts,
that's great,
are using those to scan long out of print models. So seriously, models that have not been in print for over 25 years at this point.
That's great.
Yeah. So if you look around, you can find, like, you have to, it's like one of those things, like when you used to have to buy drugs back in the day before weed was legal, and you'd have to like know a secret handshake and know where to get shit, right?
Right. Yeah. You got to know who to talk to.
You know, you have to find the right groups and the right online communities for this. But there are people who've created perfect. And like, when I say perfect, it's because they're using these dental scans, which are thousands and thousands of dollars, like hundreds of thousands of dollars. You don't buy them, you rent them.
Right. Those are fucking like legit sophisticated ass piece of technology.
Yeah. So, you know, these people have been scanning them, and they've done really wonderful scans. So, like, I know that there's a guy who did the entire Rogue Trader box set, the original Rogue Trader box set, right?
All right, so, that's pretty cool.
So there are scans that I could print out those bits 100%.
Oh man, did anyone scan original HeroQuest or Battle Masters?
Battle Masters, dude. Those have been available on. Hold on a second. I will show you. I don't know. I don't do this all the time, but hold on.
That's sick. So anyone who hasn't seen Battle Masters, Battle Masters is one of the coolest. I know we've talked about it before, but if you've never Googled it to actually look and see what Battle Masters was, you have to check out Battle Masters. I got Battle Masters for Christmas one year, and then let me tell you, that Christmas was a bloodbath. There was a lot of battling going on with Battle Masters. So like, the way Battle Masters worked is basically it was a board gamified Warhammer Fantasy is like the easiest way to explain it. But the production quality, much like HeroQuest, you know, blew every other board game completely away, because you had an absolutely gorgeous, gigantic, absolutely huge play mat, which is meant for your floor. You could play as Peter Cushing in the days of yore.
Play on the floor like a damn savage. I got it for Christmas one year too, and I absolutely adored that game. I actually have three copies now. I have two full and one partial copy. But I do have three play mats though, so I can have the epic battle.
That's awesome.
Yeah. But I sent you the copy of Thingiverse and their Hero Quest figures. So you can't see, like, there's some other stuff mixed in there, but if you just look, you could see that there's a ton of HeroQuest figures available.
Sweet. Yeah. I will peruse this later at my leisure.
At your leisure. But yes, like, there's, and so there's people who do the old school sprues, those plastic sprues from back in the day from the Rogue Trader stuff. And I know that that's something that there's plenty more, like, people have been doing the metals for a while. But I think that the fact that they did the whole sprue is fucking amazing.
Yeah, that's great.
Oh, man. I really, I love where it's going, and it's just going to get better on it. So it's like Games Workshop's just going to have to adapt and get better at doing it. I like Games Workshop minis. I actually just painted a Forge World piece that I was like, oh, man, this really, it got my juices flowing, right? It was a really well done piece. And but I just don't, it's so rare that that happens, that, and that I can't just do it with the resin on 3D printer, that it, that's rare and in between. Like, it's not, I'm not necessarily, I don't know. I can't do like the official stuff anymore because it's just like, it's too expensive for what you're getting. But anywho,
might I suggest an Age of Sigmar Stormcast army? Oh my god, they are worth so many points. I obviously without looking at any, oh, and this can actually segue into a couple things, but the first, but obviously without looking at any of the points, I was in my head, I was like, I wonder how much of an army like I'll be able to put together, because I have multiple Dominion starters, or whatever the hell this thing is called, the starter set with the Oryx versus the Sigmarines.
Yeah.
I got like three or four of the fucking Stormcast half, and like, let me tell you, I'm starting to think that like two was beyond excessive.
Oh yeah, you definitely do not need a lot.
No, like there's so many points. I was like, oh shit. So I'm actually gonna have to like prune it and like just go to like exactly what I want. Although one of the things that is pretty funny is the Stormcast are worth so few points. One of the things I was lamenting, I was like, man, it kind of sucks because like a bunch of the chambers are really, really different when it comes to list building. Because like the Knights Excelsior, they can take the Retributor or the Annihilators, the new dudes with the big ass hammers.
Yeah.
They can take those guys as battle line, which is sick. Like, that's super cool. They're the only sub faction that can do it. So I was like, damn, that's really cool. And because of that, they also are also the only sub faction arguably that makes like the a lot of the Annihilators worth like owning, because usually you're gonna use, like, for most lists that I've seen, it's like you're using 0 to 1 unit of Annihilators, period. Like, that's like the, and most lists are using 0, so like this army, it's actually reasonable to use 2 or even 3 units of Annihilators. So if you think those guys are cool, this is basically the only way to do it. So I was kind of lamenting that, and I was like, wait a minute, Stormcasts are worth, they're worth so many fucking points, and the model count is so small. I could it sounds almost comical, but I'm like, I could just do like 4 Stormcast armies, and it would be the size, like, it would still like arguably maybe be even less than the size of 1 average Age of Sigmar.
Yeah, and they're nice looking too.
Yes, yeah, like, they look really good.
Yeah. But, you know, as we've talked about before, it's all of the really good stuff for that army are, you know, you have to buy separately from the starter set.
Yes and no. Yndrasta is a staple model. She's in almost every single list. So she's in the starter. Vindicators, the Spearmen, are arguably the best infantry they have. So that's good, too. And the starter is the only way to get the Spearmen. Then that's kind of where it ends. Then you have like the other stuff in the box is like a maybe. Like most things, if you're going to use the Annihilators, like if you're going to use that, like I said, that 0 to 1 unit, you're going to use 0. You're never going to use the one with the hammer and the shield, which are their starter, obviously. The ones with the Meteoric Great Hammer, which of course only come in the available to purchase separately only kit, is, you know, far superior. So if you're going to use one, that's the one you're going to use. So yes, even in the starter, that those models are bad.
C'est la vie.
Yes, I mean, like, big surprise. Like the models in the starter are not as good as the models you can buy separately.
How are the assholes with the halberds? They got like, oh, eights.
I can't remember what their name is. They have a goofy ass name, just like everything else with the Stormcast. They are extremely good at their function, which is bodyguarding a character. So, like, if you really want to make a character live, like, they're a very good choice. Like, they can make
if Yandrasma. If you want to live, come with me.
Want to live. Yeah, like, so if you have a character who's got, like, so I think they're very good. I guess I would say that. I would just say that, like, to cut it short. But, like, the longer reasoning is that since the Stormcast are such a small model count faction, having characters that, like, do something specific is very common. And you don't want those characters to get killed because usually that's like it's like a linchpin strategy. So like for example, I'll use the new guy. So like there's the new guy from the starter, the new Lord Imperitant or whatever, the new general, the new like fighting character that's not the special character. his ability is very, very strong. It lets you deploy things deep strike way closer than normal, which is really good because that helps you get down and make the charge. So like you can get down and actually hit people and not have to worry about like the constant, like one of the worst things about Stormcast is that like, you'd be like, yeah, I'm going to deep strike my awesome fucking models. You deep strike it. You need like a 9 on your 2d6. So your model deep strikes, you fail the 9 you needed to charge, your model then just dies because it's sitting in the middle. So it's either just shot by everything or it's charged by everything that your opponent has. So that sucks. So what he does is he's like, you can now put them in, I think he like lets you do like way shorter of a range. So like it's I'm not gonna say guaranteed, but it becomes a lot closer to guaranteed than just like hope you roll a 9 or better on 2d6. So that guy is super important to keep alive so you can keep spamming that ability to make sure that your bullshit is hitting. So because of that, those guys are really good because they basically become extra ward saves for him. So if you put those three with him and you're like, my strategy is completely linchpin for this guy, he's not going to be something where your opponent's just like, I'm going to light him up with literally everything I have. Now your army strategy is dead because I killed your one guy whose ability you were using. So you can actually keep him alive. So I would say that they were an extremely good addition to the Stormcast, just kind of in general. So yes, they're good. Long answer. But they're good.
A very long answer, but I appreciate it, Steve. But I appreciate it.
They're definitely worthwhile. They're also badass looking. That is another huge benefit. They look very fucking cool.
All right, we got to wrap this up because I got to get out that snow blow.
All right, seems like a plan.
Yeah, because it snowed over here, I live on a not a busy street, but I live in a neighborhood street, and so a lot of people walk their dogs up and down the fucking sidewalks, and they trample down the fucking snow, which makes it pain in the ass to snow blow. This is Midwest problems right here. So anybody who's listening, you know, they have to put up with a little Midwest. Yeah, so these people, they trample up and down my snow with their dogs, and then they give me dirty looks because it's like, how come you haven't taken care of your sidewalks yet? And it's like, well, fuck you. Why are you walking your dog at 4:30 a.m.? No one should be walking their dog at 4:30 a.m.
Yes.
So I have to get out there and take care of that. But yeah, Midwest problems, as I said. But I did want to touch on a couple of things. Games Workshop, they're putting out a new box set, which is the Deepkin and the Fire Slayers, which I was like, is anybody calling for this box set? Is this like something that people are asking for?
From what I can understand, that is a completely like, that is the most why box set of all time. People are very why about it. So,
They are doing 40K. They're doing this thing now where it's like they're calling it seasons. Have you seen this?
No.
So like they're doing like a 6-month cycle for 40K now. It's okay. Interesting. I was trying to understand what it is, but it seems like they're doing like a campaign every 6 months, like a new campaign. Think about it, like with fantasy, they did Storm of Chaos. It would be like they come out with like a Storm of Chaos every 6 months for people to play. However, it's only focusing on like one or two factions at a time, or maybe not one or two, but like maybe like six factions at a time.
Okay.
So for 40K, because there's like 130 factions, it's a little different.
Right. There's 8 billion dudes.
Yeah, and they're like gonna rope in Kill Team into it as well. So it's like you can have it on the small scale or on the bigger scale, which sounds interesting. I like the idea.
That sounds cool and smart. I like that idea.
It does sound cool and smart. My only problem with it is it seems like a 6 month thing seems like it's like, that's a lot. There's a lot going on.
Yeah. Well, people play a lot of 40K games. So that kind of makes sense.
Yeah.
I guess. I don't know. That's a pretty fast cycle for minis games though. Like that's really fast. Like that's approaching like card game speed cycling, which is like, I mean, I don't mind lots of cool, updates to my games, but like that's, you know, you're starting to get pretty fast there.
Well, I think it'd be an interesting way of doing that and quick cycling of point costs changes and
that would work.
Yeah
that would work. Oh, and you know what's funny, I actually this morning I came to this realization because I actually looked for the Sigmar app to try and put together, to start putting together some lists to be like, yeah, maybe I'll start working on some Sigmar models. Maybe that's something I could do in this year. I can do some hobbying stuff. I was like, yeah, maybe I'll do that. Yeah, it'll be fun. So, you know, I know what my opinion is. This might be a hot take, but I actually have a specific opinion now, a very specific opinion on why Warhammer Plus failed. Very specifically, I have a specific answer in my opinion and why it failed.
What's that?
Because when you type Warhammer into the Google Play Store, do you know what does not come up?
Warhammer Plus?
Warhammer Plus does not come up when you type in Warhammer into the fucking Google Play Store.
Yeah, I said that before. I said that was one of the reasons is because no one knows how to access it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't know that it didn't come up when you didn't. I'd never searched for it because I'd never bothered because I was never, you know, I was like, I'm not really playing, so you know, I'll worry about this later. And yeah, sure enough, what the hell, dude, like the fact that Warhammer Plus does not come up as a result, that could be a reason. That they're having trouble.
Yeah, it's I had said that it's like they have like these multiple ways of accessing it, but none of it is available in like an app for your phone. And that's what people want for that. They want an app. They want,
right, because all the apps are still separated, but they don't have like an all over app, there's no like parent app. So like I had to find Warhammer Age of Sigmar, and then it's like, yeah, then like to go on the Age of Sigmar app, it's like, oh, you have to create your Warhammer account, so on and so forth, you have to do this, you have to do that. So like I get what they did, but man, did they lay that out terribly. That is absolutely the case. They laid it out like shit.
It's exactly 100%. It needed to be an app. It needed to be like, this is the way that you access everything that you can get with a Warhammer Plus subscription.
Yep.
All in one app, or it could be multiple apps, but they all have to be called Warhammer Plus, AOS Builder, Warhammer Plus, Media Viewer or something, you know, like the theater or whatever you want to call it. So you could watch all of that stuff there. They all accessible through the same login, but they're just apps that you have on your phone. And like, you can access it from the desktop, from like the parent site or whatever. But the problem is people sitting on the toilet wanting to watch fucking Blood Angels fighting whatever, like they want to do it while they're sitting on the toilet. I'm not necessarily for that because it causes hemorrhoids, but that's how the majority of people consuming information nowadays is on the toilet. So
on their toilet.
Yes, I said that before. I go, that's the main problem. And they should have realized that much, much earlier, that there was a problem with accessing. It's like, how do you do this? I don't know. I don't care. So I'm not going to do it.
Yeah, it was there should have absolutely been like an overarching, like a master app to rule them all.
Yeah, I don't think Games Workshop understands how lazy their fucking fan base.
That's not even necessarily like, I'm not even gonna necessarily slam the Workshop fan base for that particular thing. It's just, it's literally like, that's you need to lay out your apps like that. Like,
yeah. Oh no, it's true.
It's so hard to find. That's the whole thing. Like the app store is so loaded with apps. Like the fact that I typed in Warhammer and the first result was not Warhammer Plus is a huge, in my opinion, a huge fucking problem.
Well, yeah, they have so many like shitty mobile game bloat that it's which is really funny because the best Warhammer games that should be on mobile are not on mobile, like Underworld or Battlefleet Gothic.
Absolute banger mobile game. That game would be so good as a fucking mobile game.
Absolutely. They're going to put out fucking Total War as a mobile game, and still Underworlds is not a mobile game.
Wild.
Yeah. And not to mention the fact that Battlefleet Gothic should also be a mobile game, because who wouldn't want to play space combat in the 41st millennium on their phone?
Mm-hmm.
I think everyone.
Yeah, everyone wants that.
Like, so many of those, like, tabletop simulator versions of their specialist games should be mobile games. Like, the fact that you can't even play Warhammer Fantasy Battles tabletop simulator on your phone is ridiculous to me, because there's no better way to play that game than it's a turn-by-turn game. You just do it on your phone, you make your moves, and then you wait for your opponent to do that, and it'll like give you a notification your opponent has made his moves. So then you go back and you do your phases or whatever.
I'm not even gonna lie, like, I'm actually kind of surprised that like that Workshop has never released a one-to-one of an out-of-print edition. Like that, like, just for the sake of argument, let's just say sixth edition, because that's where Total War kind of lies. Like, Total War is kind of like in a weird like sixth edition, like the sixth to eighth edition.
You're absolutely right.
Like, how like the fact that there isn't literally like Warhammer the Game of Fantasy Battles for your cell phone is wild.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. The nice thing is because it's you go, I go. You get to do everything all at the same time. You don't have to worry about any of it. Like you don't have to pay attention while you're playing it. It could be like Words with Friends. It's Warhammer with friends, even though anybody who plays Warhammer would not be a friend of mine, but that's beside the
I love it.
But aside from that. All right. So I think that puts it about an hour. So go to our Game Classy Facebook page. The best way you can get in contact with us. You can like, comment, subscribe on the iTunes, and like, comment, subscribe on the YouTubes. You can get a hold of Steve at Twitter at underscore command throw.
It's command underscore throw.
Yes. It's still early in the morning for me. And you can get in contact with me on the Instagram. I am Game Classy Joe. Taking a hiatus because I am packing up for a big move later on in the year. So I probably won't be posting much for the next couple months, but I am working on a Elysian drop troop army currently. So speaking of discontinued things,
the curse will return.
The curse, for sure. Actually, the funny thing about that cursed Elysian army, and I was thinking about this, is that I remember I did quite a bit of work on that one. So I bet you whoever has that army still has my painted figures in that box somewhere.
I painted a commissar, so they might have my commissar that I painted.
Exactly.
It was a pretty good job.
This Elysian army that I'm doing is 3D printed. I was like, this is why I love 3D printing, Steve, because I was like, all right, I need to drop troops. I need to drop Sentinel, right? And so I was looking, I was like, drop Sentinels. And I found one file online for a drop Sentinel, and they wanted like $13 for it. And I was like, nah, I'm just going to make my own. So I took a free Sentinel model and I modded it, you know, just using my 3D sculpting techniques, and created my own drop Sentinel. And you know what? Looks better than the one that was paid. That's all I have to say for it. But nice. Yeah, that's what 3D printing is all about, Steve. It's being too cheap to afford a $13 file for a mini. I always poo-poo anybody who charges like more than $5 for a file. Like, I get like when this 3D printing hobby first started, everything was free. So people would put out some really fucking great models for free, like almost one-to-one with GW. And then as people got really good with it, they started charging for it. And I was like, I get it. But there are some people who are like charging ridiculous amounts for stuff that they should not be charging. Like, there are plenty of free Sentinel files that are out there that you could just look for and find and mod out yourself to whatever you want. This guy charging $13 for it. It was just like, come on, dude, that's too much.
But yeah, that's pretty rough.
All right. So Steve, until next time,
may your new year be vigorous.
Be Detergent.
Detergent.
Later.
Game classy.